The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Aww, thank you, Lino. Listen, you guys. Thank you. Thank you for coming out on, like, you all look so windblown and very she-she. It's like crazy. But I really, really appreciate you coming out tonight. This is the first, I haven't emerged from my house in a year, let's put it this way. I've been writing away, and this is pre-pub for Daddy's Girl. So in a way, the first thing we have to talk about, and it's really the only part of the evening that's planned, is the tasty cakes. Oh, yes, we are talking chocolate cupcakes. I'm sorry. Hey, Betty, I know you thought this was going to be a literary evening, but you should have known better. It's me. This is so great because, you know, so I'm on this low-carb thing. Have you noticed? I'm working it for you tonight. Thank you. I have the underwire bra on. I got a little Vegas going in the shirt. So, you know, of course, so when I shop, I go to Whole Foods. You guys know Whole Foods, don't you? Okay, so let's see if they roll. Oh, yeah. You can't beat it. And that's right. You know it will taste the same in 2 months and 2 years from now, which is just what we love about tasty cakes. So I was in Whole Foods about 2 weeks ago. Nice catch, sir. Are you single? I just said I was going to be good tonight. I know. Keep me. You know what's scary? My therapist is in the front row. Marcia, stand up. Marcia Schwartz Klein. Come on. I'm cured, though. I had 10 years of therapy. I said, I want to write a book. She was the only person in the world who said, you're not crazy. It's true, and I wouldn't be standing here. So if you want to write a book or you feel crazy, you need to see her. So what I was telling you was that I was in Whole Foods. And they said, are you doing another book? I said, well, yeah, because I have this mortgage. And they said, you know, we know that you give out tasty cakes, and we don't think that's good. Because they have all those preservatives. I'm like, yeah, that is the best part. And they're like, so we were thinking maybe you could give, like, what is this, like a Luna bar or something? Or maybe some fresh fruit? Answer, no. So there you go. Here's the only thing I'm worrying about, because you know I will talk nonstop. I don't want to step on it. I bought it, and I can step in it. It's fun. You get to have fun. So here's the question. I mean, I don't want to tell you the same old stories, and God knows I have lots of new stories and new news. Who has heard, like, my old stories? I don't know if you want to hear the old stories. I feel like we're going to be like that old couple where you go, like, oh, she's not going to tell the one about the twin, is she? I mean, heroes in the audience. Well, let's take a second. I wrote a book called Devil's Corner. And, you know, to do all this research, I go out and find experts. And I wrote that book because I thought there were heroes among us, even before that stupid TV show came on. Like, you don't need superpowers. What you need is heart and brain and commitment. And we have somebody here today to whom we all owe great debt. His name is Rich Lorette. He helped me a great deal with Devil's Corner. He is an assistant United States attorney, but he should be a king. And he works every day to keep our streets safer for all of us and our children. Rich, will you stand up, please? I know you hate this. He's so shy. And lovely wife, Eileen. I'll try not to make this old home week, but when I see people who deserve applause, and that's all of you, truly. And my cousins are here, too. Let's clap for Scottolini. Well, okay. You want to hear a little of how I got to be a writer, and I'll sort of bring you to present day and talk about the new stuff, too. The only thing I think is the fun, I hope the fun thing about this, besides the food, is that I tell you the stuff I think you can't read in the book. You know, someone had said to me today, what will you read at the library tonight? I'm like, oh my God, I think they would shoot me. Maybe the list of ingredients on the, let me hear. Total fat, 7 grams. Yeah, right. That's fiction. Okay, anyway. But I digress. How I got to be a writer is sort of, a story that is sad and pathetic. I was a bookworm. In fact, we'll come back to that when we start to talk about Daddy's Girl. By the way, tonight when I say when we talk, that means when I talk. See, because you never get to talk, and you'll learn very quickly why I'm divorced twice. It's not an accident. But basically, who sent me to? Who sent me to?
Right here.
You get some chocolate. Come here. All divorced people should get some chocolate, God damn it. So basically, I am a readaholic. I mean, I love to read. And I always read and was a bookworm. Nat Greco in this book is a bookworm. But she's young. It's because I can make that up. I mean, and basically always wanted to write. And it really wasn't until I was a lawyer. And I love that, too. Because it's very dramatic. I mean, for the reason Law and Order can go, dun, 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 dun. You know the song. Don't pretend you don't know the song. And I thought, all right, well, that's a good steady job. And I liked it. And then what happened is, well, just about the time my baby came along, my marriage broke up, which isn't really good timing. Don't write this part down. But basically found myself without a job and wanting to really broke. And wanting to finally give writing a try since you couldn't get broker than broke. Although I found out you could. And, briefly, I mean, in case you're wondering, I did live on credit cards. I still do. But I can make it sound classy now, when really then it was just dirt baggy. But basically, what? Yeah. But it was important because I really decided that I want to stay home with my daughter. And I thought, well, this is the time to try to be a writer. And if you're going to live on your credit cards, I had 5 credit cards with $10,000 credit limit apiece. And I started charging. So that it was wonderful, really, because my kid had all the books she needed and all the DVDs. Oh, living beyond your means is terrific. I mean, I recommend it. And what actually happens is if you pay off the credit card at the right time each month, like even if you pay $10, what do? They increase the credit limit. You're either like a crack addict or someone trying to be an author. They don't care. So basically, I would charge everything and write in my spare time. After about 5 years of rejection, I got to about $38,500 in debt at 21% interest. The line between federal banking laws and mafia-related money lending. It's an illusion. That's my legal opinion, but that's all I'm saying on the subject. I have cousins I could have gotten it from cheaper, if you know what I'm saying. Not the Scottolinis. No, the Scottolinis are the classy half. It's the Lopos where all the flavor is. But I digress. So, lest you feel like this is a big sob story, it isn't. I'll tell you one cute kid story, but now that she's 21, I have to stop. But fast forward to, basically, 5 years of rejection, great rejection letters, favorite rejection letter, from a New York agent. We don't have time to take any more clients, and if we did, we wouldn't take you. Nice, huh? But basically, finally got a nibble, and then went back to work as a law clerk, which if you've been a lawyer is kind of like starting over. And 1 week into that, the first book was bought by a publishing house. It wasn't for a living wage. I still had to have a day job, and I still had to pay back all that debt. But fast forward to the time when all of a sudden I'm employed, and I have to live within my means, and that means no more credit cards. Now, the interesting thing was my daughter, who was growing up age 0 to 6 during this time period, was one of the few children in America who had not been in a McDonald's, because then McDonald's didn't take credit cards. Okay, this was the dark ages, which meant that McDonald's was the one place we were not going. I mean, we were not going to McDonald's. So we would drive by. Of course, that means that's the one place she wants to go. You know, no, you know, red and yellow, you know, the meat's bad. But the place we do go is Chili's. And that was like every other Friday night we would do that. You know, Chili's. Because you could charge it. So when we sell the book, guess what? The kid's going to McDonald's for the first time. She thinks she's in heaven. She's looking around. I take her in to the one in on Lancaster Avenue in Paoli. It's a classy one. You have to wash your hair for that one. So she's in McDonald's. She's looking around like a child from the Ukraine. She's amazed. Her eyes, and I have to teach her, you know, glistening surfaces, red and yellow, and I have to teach her how we behave in McDonald's. First time ever. Kid's 7. So you stand in line. It's not really like Chili's, because you have to stand in line. Then you look up, and the menu's up there. And she looks at it and says, oh, well, where are the appetizers? Great, huh? Every head turns. Who is this little brat, this princess? I want to say, you know, she was broke. She just didn't know it. I mean, it was a good time, and I'm got to be, above all, besides the great thrill of standing in front of you and with you, I got to be home with her. And now that she's 21 and doesn't want me around her, it's perfect. It worked out. So that's sort of how I got to be me. The stories come from stuff I remember. It's stuff I lived. I think it's stuff you lived. Well, some of it. Should I go there? Are you sick of it?
No.
Well, I won't tell them all. But one is a memory of when I was walking with my mother. I was probably about 7. We were stopped at a street corner in a place known as South Philadelphia. And we stopped at the corner, and there was a big pink car that pulled up. You could do this story. Chrome. You know the way cars used to be? Curvy, sexy. This car had curves, man. And the woman behind the wheel had curves, too, and lots of black hair and black eyebrows and red, red lips. And my mother said, oh. And she said, watch this. And she got off the street corner while I was standing, and she walked over to the car. And when she did, the woman driver turned around like this. You know, like Italian kabuki is what I'm like. Very dramatic. Fix the handle of the window. Pump the window up like this. Closes the window on my mother's face. My mother's laughing. She comes back to the curb. I said, who was that? She said, that was my sister. I'm not making it up. You know I'm not making it up. Okay. So I'm like, what? That's your Aunt Lena, and we don't speak. We haven't spoken in 17 years. Why? Well, at some point midlife, which was like yesterday. Wait, my bra's running out. Oh, God. Be in the too much information category, wouldn't it? I say to my mother, why didn't we speak to Aunt Lena? Because you start to grow up in my family, the Lopo half, and you learn that blood and tomato sauce are very thick. Like, that we have a relative that we didn't talk to, I don't understand. So I start to interview my family. Half of the family, and they're all older, unfortunately many of them have passed now, well, they all have. They say, well, we don't talk to Aunt Lena because she brought a gun to a wedding. Oh, flavor. And the other half says, you know, we don't talk to Aunt Lena because she brought a gun to a Holy Communion. Now, they see this as different. With apology. And they actually convinced me that it's different because you know that a wedding there'd be liquor, and at a Holy Communion the liquor would be what, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock? We wait a little. So, but what I started to understand from listening to my family, because they grew, you know, it's a little bit of what Marcia taught me, you are whatever you think you are, also with apologies to Eminem, that great scholar. These people grew up in fascist Italy, in a way, where there's no respect for law. You know, the cops are thugs. There isn't people like Rich Lorette. If you want people to come and stand up for you and risk their time and their life, I mean, he's had death threats for us. They don't have that. They didn't grow up with that. So they make their own law. They distrust authority. And their law is such that if you do something so antisocial as to bring a gun to an open bar situation, we will never talk to you again. You are dead to us. You watch Colbert or Tony Soprano, don't you? So it's all the same. I said, that's a book. That book became Vendetta Defense. Because I wrote about a woman who was from Philadelphia, and she had natural blonde hair. It's my imagination. And she has to defend an Italian immigrant who thinks he killed somebody and it wasn't murder. A lot of this stuff comes out of my life. I'm tempted to tell you about... I'll tell you about this too, and then we'll get serious. Because it's the library. I'll say some things like characterization. You'll go, oh, yes, and we'll all feel like we got our money's worth. I won't be like the comic relief of all the people who speak at the library. How about that? So then one day, there is a knock on my door. Somebody do a knock for me. I feel the need for a sound effect. Oh, wait a minute. We get you cupcakes for all. Excellent knocking. Knock, knock. Who's at the door? Hi. I'm your half-sister, and I really like your books, she says. The woman looks exactly like me. Well, all right, we will go there. Except she has a great body, if you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? I don't have to do that, do I? Thank you, sir. I don't have to do that. I'm like, come right in. Well, it turns out my dad, God bless him, this will be a night to talk about dads. And this will be the part, actually, that some of the stuff I love best about my father is his faults. And, well, in walked one through the door. Because basically she said that she was the product. My dad had an affair. I'm lowering my voice. My dad had an affair, and she had been put up for adoption. And before you start feeling sorry for her, okay, she was adopted by a wonderful family, two Stanford professors. I got the Scottolinis. I want the sympathy. I want all the... So basically, she's a wonderful person. She looked on the birth certificate. There is my name. Best argument for changing your name when you marry and divorce and marry and divorce. And she knew me because of the books. I'm not even hard to find. Unless you're a single man, in which case I'm impossible to find, but evidently. But we're not going there yet. Here she is. She looks exactly... I call my dad. Dad, there's a girl who says that she's your... I'll be right over. It was like a cartoon. You imagine the tires and like Roadrunner. Well, you know, it's the real deal. And so here I was in a situation where like I'm in the family where everything's thick. Blood is family, whom you're supposed to love them. And I'm looking at this person who's blood and is a stranger. Now, like I told you, I'm a book fan. So my first thing to do was to go to the... I went to the library and I also went to the bookstore. So where are the books that tell you, well, what to do when you're found when you didn't know you were lost? Because that's what was happening. I was like, I'm your what? And as much as I always wanted a sister, I sort of, after age 35, which I can't even remember anymore, I thought I wouldn't get one. I mean, I wanted a pony, too, but I bought the pony, so that was easy. So here we're going to start to get to know each other. And I started to take notes. I mean, I said, you know, if you don't mind, I'm going to take notes on basically everything you say. Her name is Jean, by the way. My brother likes to call her Jean Poole. I think that's funny. She doesn't think it's funny, but I think it's really funny. And, you know, so here we are. Well, that becomes a book, Mistaken Identity. Because you can say it's hokey, but my whole next year was living with a person who was very twinny to me and trying to figure out where we fit in each other's lives. And that's Benny's experience. She goes to a prison, she sees a woman, the woman says, I'm your long-lost twin, and defend me on a murder charge. And we had all that. It was like Patty Duke, only without the murder charge. You know that song too. Should we sing the song?
Yes.
Meet Patty, who's lived most
everywhere.
Together from Zanzibar to Berkeley Square, but seen the sights a girl can see from Brooklyn. Boom. Yeah, but they're cousins. Yeah, identical cousins. All. Oh, yeah. One pair of matching bookends. What? Different as night and day. Yeah! Okay. I mean, is Ha Jin going to come and sing that to you? Oh, please, God. Soon we'll talk about allegory. I can feel it. Nice catch. Okay, so here, I made that a book. And as an aside, one more quick cute story. Because, you know, I mean, there's a lot in that book about who owns truth. I can work it if I have to. And I wanted to say that, you know, especially to my dad, I was so close. I mean, he was, wow, he felt terrible. And I said, you didn't do anything wrong, at least to me, except keep the secret. Because I really thought, for some reason, I thought, isn't this weird? Although, you don't need to be a therapist to figure out this reason. Because I thought, what if I actually hit this girl with my car and, you know, ran around the front of the car? How cool would this be? And then you come around the front of the car and the person lining up looks like you, only with a really big chest. You know what I'm saying? Boom, boom, boom. You know what I'm saying? That was weird, but that's all I was thinking. I said, oh, my God, okay, Dad, you shouldn't have kept the secret. Now we know her. We're going to figure out where she fits in. And that was exactly the task that Benny had. But the first job was, of course, telling my child, who saw this woman come into the house who looks like me. Now, this is the part where I tell you that my brother's gay. And we're all fine with that. In fact, he likes to call himself Aunt Frank. Oh, this is the kids are resilient lesson. Because it has to be because of all the curveballs that the grown-ups throw them. But so I had to sit my kid down and I said, listen, honey, well, you know how your only aunt was Frank? It's confusing. But she dealt with it because this happened when the Democrats were in power. Did someone say Democrats? And so basically, I said to her, here's what happened. You know how we love Grandpa. We love Grandpa like nobody's business. And I didn't think it was the worst lesson because I thought, you know, look, here's the kid going to learn that sometimes people who want you to think well of them don't tell the truth. Let's think. Hypothetically, they dye their hair so their gray doesn't show. Or they wear contact lenses because their glasses are really thick. Or they get the braces because they're, you know, I mean, we all have something that isn't, well, maybe you don't, but I do. So I said to my kid, so this, you know, Grandpa basically had an affair. Now here's what an affair is. Oh, I know what an affair is, she says. Age 8, whatever. That's what President Clinton had. See now, don't you miss the Democrats? Aren't you a little happy they're going to come back and begin? And that also became Dead Ringer, because in that book, it was kind of like, what if? Because now I got to know Gene, and Gene's wonderful. So I go, Gene, now you're some saint. You were married to the same guy. Think of that. He built their house. What? And I'm like a trial lawyer, you know. What if you were adopted by some horrible family, and you turned out, and then you came to find your half-sister, and she was like an author, and you thought she was whatever? Wouldn't you be so angry and jealous? Gene is like, no. La! You know, I would just be so happy you were happy. You know, I'm like, you know, I don't even understand that kind of thinking. But then I said, okay, forget it, because we're not writing about you. We're writing about an evil twin, and that became Dead Ringer. Killer Smile more recently was about a sadder subject, about the internment during World War II. And that came from my father. Because when he was supposed to be in remission. That's not a good sentence to say. And he had me to the house. He lived in Wynwood. And he basically realized he was not he was not in remission anymore. And so he gave me our deed to our cemetery plot. This is going to get funny soon. And also what he told me were my grandparents' enemy alien registration cards. I'm like, what are these people enemies of? They lived at 49th and Thompson for 30 years. They never became citizens, okay, because they didn't speak the language. And actually, my grandfather was illiterate in Italian and English. I mean, we had this covered. God bless him. But they had to register during World War II. You may know the Japanese were interned. Well, so were Italians and so were Germans. That was news to me. Also, what happened is on both coasts, the FBI searched my grandparents' house. And my father told me this basically on his deathbed, that men had come into the house in ties. That's bad news. You might be dead if someone's coming in a tie. And had searched the house and taken away their flashlights and their radio. Not even a shortwave radio, mind you. Normal, only the shadow knows radio. Yeah, FBI right on top of that situation. And my poor grandparents only had the general idea that if you were Italian, people came into your house and took away your small electrical appliances. didn't make that connection, you know what I'm saying? But basically, they kept that a secret. I wrote a book about it, Killer Smile, and happily enough, if you ever look at the back of that book, I said to my publisher, I want to, little bitchy girl that I am, I want to print this in the back. And they let me put in back my grandparents' actual enemy alien registration card, so you can see it there. And I think the coolest thing about it, because partly I wrote about it, I liked it. This is all family stories. It's all personal stories, every book. But you always sort of, you're a smart group. And I want to always have some kind of harder questions in the background that inform the story. They're not what the story's about. You're not in school anymore. I mean, I teach a justice and fiction course, and I could do that, but that's not what you're here for. But I sort of knew, and anybody would have known, talking to my dad then, that the next couple of years in war, we were going to be thinking about balancing our liberties versus our national security. I'm a big civil libertarian until I get on a plane. And then I want to strip search everyone. Well, you know what I mean. Only the men. Okay, so I should make jokes like that. It looks desperate. And so we come to present, which is also about my dad. I took a break from the D'Annunzio stuff because of my dad. I mean, anyone who knew my father, even though he was hip and cool, his heart was Mr. D'Annunzio. The way he loved his daughter. My dad came to a signing, and he came to all my signings, and somebody said to him, oh, you must be very proud of your daughter. And he said, I was proud of her the day she came out of the egg. And that's true. And I knew it. Every minute. In my family, you didn't have to achieve anything. You just had to. In fact, I took a lot of the soul of it for Daddy's Girl because this character is in a... she's a bookworm. This is me trying to look carefree. She's a bookworm. And in a little bit, as much as we were a close family, I read all the time. And so my mother said to me most often, What did she say? Take a guess. What? Get your nose out of the book. You're going to ruin your eyes. Go out and play. I mean, Italians are wonderful. I think, I don't want to say it's completely an Italian thing, but there's not a really, at least in my family, there wasn't really an intellectual bent. Which is not the worst thing. Now I'm getting older. I'm like, the whole message of enjoy yourself, that's kind of smart. But I wanted to read. And that's why I always talk at libraries, because it wasn't really until I came to a library that I really felt, quite honestly, that was valued. I mean, I say, and this is a true thing, my mother hates when I tell this, but there was one book in our house. The Bible. Aren't you so sweet? No, TV Guide. TV Guide. The Bible. What? They don't know us. Even this half of the Bible. What are you talking about? From 10th and Daily, the Bible. Jesus. No Bible. I mean, it really wasn't until I got to a school library and I saw not only do books have hardcovers, but they don't all have Lucille Ball. It was like a whole new world. And I wanted to have that character. And I guess I also, I wanted to write, because you always want to, for me, I always want to write a personal thing. So I wanted to write about a daddy's girl. The only problem is it's a little bit like when you find out you have a twin you didn't know about. You can't make her a good twin because, do you care? No. We want an evil twin. And a little bit I couldn't write about, and maybe I'm still too close to it, my relationship to my dad, which was, I really was a true, what's a daddy's girl mean to you? What does it mean? What's a daddy's girl? I mean, isn't it, you just loved up? You just, everything is you and, yeah. Okay, I was that. It's not good fiction. So I made her somebody who, being this bookworm and a law professor at, let's think, the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Do I do my homework or what? She has this rambunctious family, all boys, jockey, construction. She's got a nice boyfriend. He fits in perfectly with the family, but unfortunately not with her. She's teaching to a class of 7 people. I'll read you the first sentence because it's extremely literary. I know that you will appreciate it. Be ready, because you might not understand it because it's so literary. Ready? Nat Greco felt like an A cup in a double D bra. She couldn't understand why her tiny class was held in such a huge lecture hall unless it was a cruel joke of the registrars. You get the idea. She has trouble fitting in. She doesn't really know where she belongs. The only way she fits in her family is because of her boyfriend, who's kind of their passport to all the rambunctious, sports-oriented family. One day, a very handsome guy on the faculty, who's like the faculty hunk, his name is Angus Holt. I didn't know if I was going to do this, but I think I am going to do this. He persuades her to come to a prison, Chester County Prison. I know, I changed the name because the law department said change the name. I'm like, okay, it's exactly what it looks like. Everybody knows where it is. But in any event, they were very nice. They helped me a lot. I met a lot of very nice people that you put there. Let me tell you, Rich.
No problem.
They're bad guys for a reason is what I learned. And let's imagine that this nice law professor, bookish, goes there to talk to them about the Merchant of Venice, who they think is a drug dealer at 12th, and basically a prison riot breaks out. She is forced to run. Someone tackles her, tries to attack her. Does she stand for it? Of course not, because I wrote her. And while she is running to save herself, she sees a prison guard dying on the floor. She goes to give him CPR. She takes her Hermes scarf. Well, she's that kind of girl. Tries to staunch the flow of blood, doesn't succeed in doing so, but she hears his last words, which are, tell my wife I love her. That's what you would think, but that isn't what it is. Another surprise. Tell my wife it's under the floor. And she has this information. She doesn't know what it means. She's got to figure it out. I try to write all of these books with just how I would be, only, as I say, younger, and what she would do next, what somebody would logically do next, and sometimes I try to throw in some romance. Okay, now, the man who inspired this book, besides my father, is this guy. How sad and pathetic is this that I'm telling you this? You know when you say, where do you get your ideas? Sometimes you could be looking in some magazine and go, that is just about the hottest guy I've ever seen in my life. I want to write a book about him. So when you read and see Angus Holt, I tried to describe him, but this is really who I'm talking about. I'm sure that he reads a lot. And can he spell? Do I care? But think of him. I wrote a sex scene for you with him. I better bail on this. You get the idea. That's what the book is about. It's really more about this woman's relationship to her father and her family, and ultimately in herself. I mean, I try to really... There's a lot of wonderful books out there, a lot of thrillers, and a lot of thrillers are written about... I think of them as Superman. We have a preoccupation with that in the culture, if you look at it. Heroes, right? Comic books. Everybody, they have X-ray vision. Their checkbooks always balance. They're not real people, at least not to me. You can read them. I read that stuff, but I'm never going to write that stuff. I want to write about a real woman in a real situation, partly because I always am writing a little bit for me and also a little for you to sort of say, I don't know what life throws in your way. But if you're about our age, there's been plenty of stuff you're jumping over. Oh, you know what I mean? Oh, watch out. No. And where do you get the resources to say, I can get through this thing? Because you really have to, as you know. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But I try to write a natural person who's a normal person who's in a real situation, because that could happen. I went to that prison that day. I thought, ooh, what if this happened? I didn't have the idea until I walked in there. And I was, unlike Rich, scared. I mean, I'm 5'2", and I curse, but that's about as tough as I get. And these guys, and we sat in a classroom, and no one had handcuffs on. I'm like, where are the handcuffs? Lock these people up! You know, I'm a lawyer, and they're wanting me. And so what would prevent that? In fact, as I found out, there had been a riot at Chester County Prison a year before, and they were terrific to me. They really helped me. I don't even think they'll mind that I wrote about it. At least I hope, but what are they going to do? Sue me, Rich. But I'm always trying to write about an ordinary woman. Sorry, women are the main characters. They fall in love, but I wanted to write what I wasn't reading. It's interesting because the book got a... I want to talk about the Inquirer a second, because partly I got a very nice review in the Inquirer yesterday, in case you didn't see it. But I do want to say something. This will be me, like, completely like... okay, who has reading glasses? It's just apropos, because apropos talking more specifically about the way I write and why. It's a really nice review. She said a lot of good stuff. But she says something that's wrong. She said, a lawyer, that's me, the Philadelphia native broke into the mystery writing in the early 1990s when the legal thriller genre was still relatively new and devoid of women writers. It almost still is, but leave that aside. Awards came first. Avoid passive voice. And success followed as a result of Scottolini's realization that what her readers wanted were not legal thrillers, but thrillers about gutsy, assertive women who happened to be lawyers. Now, that's part of that's true. But I want to circle back to what I started out to say in the beginning, which is I was a lawyer, and then I became a mom. And now I teach... And I'm about to get another job, which is being a columnist for The Inquirer, which I'll tell you about in a minute, which I'm really excited about. What this wonderful reviewer assumes is that I realized what you wanted, and then I wrote it. That couldn't be more wrong. As much as I love you guys, and I do, and appreciate you being here, it doesn't work that way. To those of you who are thinking about writing, don't ever do that. I mean, my mother said, be yourself. I wrote about women who were strong and fun and smart, because that's the kind of women I spend time with and know. And I don't write about people who are defined by their jobs, because I'm not. And the time I learned that lesson, if I didn't know it already, was when I basically became a failed lawyer, but the best mom, a good mom. So that's not really true, and I had to correct that because I couldn't deal with that. And I think it's just apropos your own writing, because I know there's two people in the audience who emailed me and said they were thinking about writing, and I really want to encourage you. And we'll talk in a second to question and answer. But you have to write what you feel and hope people like it. And I'm grateful if you do, and I'm grateful that you came tonight. As an important note, I'm doing something in Philadelphia, which I hope you guys will like. I don't know if you saw the ad on Sunday, but you know how I started writing these books? Because I basically felt like, why are wonderful books are bound, but all of the people felt like superheroes, and a lot of them are men. And I thought, there's a lot of women in this world, like 50%, and we have the vote now. Can we stop pouring coffee in books? I mean, I teach in this course justice and fiction, and we can talk about that if you want to. I call it Perry Mason to present. But we're still Della Street in so many places. And I thought, I want to write a book where the woman's the main character, that's all. It's not anti-man. Half my readers are men. And as I've said before, the men always write and go, I love the issues of justice and civil liberties your books present. And women always write and go, I hate pantyhose too. Don't you love it? But basically I've been sort of feeling like I was missing, because I love the newspaper and I love the Inquirer. And I read, and I also have missed, do you remember Ellen Goodman? Yes. Do you remember Anna Quinlan, who still writes sometimes? I read Maureen Dowd because I just want to read something funny that a woman wrote. And I thought, what? No one's doing that. I mean, some people are doing it, but there's certainly not enough women doing it. Karen Heller's a terrific writer. She's terrific. But I thought, why can't I do this too? I wonder if I can do this too. And I begged the Inquirer, and they said, yes, you could. So on Sundays, starting... What? When? You hold this so I can read it. March 18th, you can read the debut of my column, which is called Chick Wit. I thought of it. Thank you. I hope you will get it. In fact, they're being very nice at the Inquirer. They're going to give away. Well, now you probably all... Do you guys subscribe to the Inquirer? God bless it. I knew you guys. Great. Okay. Anyway, read it. See what you think. Let me know. Drop me an email. It will be in the image section. Yeah, I think it'll be really fun. It's just going to be about, I don't know what it's going to be about yet. I think it's going to be just about, it's going to be fun. It's not going to be, I said it's going to be like Maureen Dowd without the politics or the PMS. Because I have no estrogen, so that's impossible. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be about stuff that, it's going to be about underwire bras and looking at men in magazines and occasional heroes that walk around right among us and don't wear capes. Just save our lives. So, ask me some questions now because I'm going on and on. Yes, please. Ask me what book I finished last night. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, bum, bum. Ask me. Bum, bum. Oh, I keep doing this, so you ask me. What? A book with a character named Mary D'Annunzio. Thank you for asking. I missed them, but I really felt like it was just, I was too emotional. I couldn't do it. And it was fun, too, to try to do something else. I mean, I appreciate you guys reading me, but the truth is, I really have to keep it fresh. And so if I was feeling too bummed out to write them, I knew it would read flat. And it doesn't. So this is a new character, but they're always going to come back. I'm not letting them go. I want to see what happens to them. Yes, please.
Well, in addition to writing wonderful books, you're obviously a very entertaining personality. And I was wondering, have you had the opportunity to do Leno, Letterman, things like that?
You mean Jay and David? Well, that's very sweet of you to say all this stuff. And if I had something to wear, I would stop turning down their frequent invitations. No, I mean, I would love to do something like that. But, I don't think they want the tasty cakes is what I'm thinking. Yes. Speaking to my breast.
I do volunteer work at the prison in Chester.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I want to know, when was there a riot there?
There was there was a riot there. Well, I went last year. It was the year before. No, I think it was...
State Correctional in
In Pocopson. In Pocopson or the one in Chester?
In Chester.
Oh, no. This is the one in Pocopson. Okay. No, yes, please.
Are any of your books...
Oh, what nice.
Are any of your books scheduled to be made into a film? And if so, who is going to be the female star?
What am I going to do now? Tell me what I'm going to do. You know what I'm going to do. Because nothing is going to be made into a film. Ready? Watch. Such a baby. No, answer your question. They're probably still good, you know. I mean, it's not like... You're not giving me the guilt now. She wasted food. First off, it's tasty cakes. I got my food. So far, not. I gave you not the smush ones. I mean, I shouldn't really whine because happily the Rosado series was optioned by TV. And that would be very nice if that happens. It's happening very slowly. So we still pray. I become an excellent Catholic when anything gets optioned. How superficial am I? But maybe someday that would be very nice. Please ask me anything. Yes.
Your family have a place in Seattle City?
That's us.
My family's lucky it has one house.
It's adorable. And then the manicured lawn, it's so
I told you they were the classy family. No, we don't. No, they do. I want to have that, though. I don't have that. No, it does sound nice, though. When are we all coming over? The manicured lawn, I'm hearing. Yes, please. Talk a little? Me? Talk a little? I thought that, I secretly thought that, they don't know this, but they're not here. I thought that law students needed to think a little about the images in society of lawyers and of justice. Because I think that tell it briefly. So basically what I started to do was to look at the images of, like, in the 50s, Perry Mason. Are we okay on time? I don't want to... I'll keep it short. I sort of think of Perry Mason as, well, frankly, the baseline mammogram. Perry Mason is what everything good is supposed to look like. Perry Mason always represents an innocent man. He always convicts the guilty person. And the guilty person happens to be in the gallery of the courtroom. Right? He breaks the guy on cross. That's what it's supposed to look like. And if you look at, like, Atticus Finch, To Kill a Mockingbird, the 60s, when the lawyer was really regarded as a champion, and the law was really regarded as a way, right? To Kill a Mockingbird is really about discrimination. And even though Atticus loses, we know that that's a perversion of justice. Law leads to justice in the 60s. And that's not a coincidence, because the civil rights movement is, right? And it was really the law that was forcing, for example, the federal government, federal judges, that forced state judges to desegregate. People understood that then. And then what started to happen is the Vietnam War. And then there was one important court ruling called Miranda. You know the Miranda case, which basically held that, well, a confessed rapist went free because he was not told he had a right to counsel. Now, when you look at the writings of the Times, particularly letters to the editor, I'm a big letters to the editor fan, you see how outraged people were. They didn't get it. Wait a minute. Law is supposed to lead to justice. In this case, the law not only didn't lead to justice, it actually thwarted justice. The world, as a sociological matter, in my view, went topsy-turvy. Right? Criminals walk. Police get yelled at. They caught a rapist and they got yelled at. People didn't understand it. To a certain extent, they still aren't buying it. And so as soon as that started to happen, if you look at the fiction that came next, I don't think it's an accident that The Godfather became the next biggest popular fiction. Because in The Godfather, the bad guys are the ones you root for. The cops are the thugs, fascist Italy. And we're cheering wildly. through Godfather 1, 2, and 3. And that goes on when you go next to something like The Firm. Right? We're far from Atticus Finch, aren't we? Now, the lawyers are really a mafia front. And in case you missed that, one of the next popular movies around that time, late 70s, is Devil's Advocate, where the lawyers aren't the mob anymore, they're Satan. Just in case you missed this. And part of me goes, gee, this is really not a good thing, because what really happens is, I think, views of justice are intimately related to our view of our society. And if we think justice is sick, it's not, in a way, it means we're sick. I mean, what started to happen right after that, right around that time, which led to that, was Watergate, right? We have the Attorney General going to jail. What are you going to think of lawyers? You can't sell people Atticus Finch when they've seen, you know, John Mitchell. Everybody, most people remember Martha Mitchell on the phone at night. They all thought she was nuts. She was telling the truth, right? So you have a total topsy-turviness after the war, after these decisions, and the view of lawyers goes right into the crapper. It only starts to come out again in the late 80s, I think, because first there's humor that gets injected into it. Think of My Cousin Vinny. Utes, the Utes, right? Such a great movie. He's adorable, and I think that's when the characterization starts to broaden, because instead of it being a sort of the cardboard character of Perry Mason, the lawyer becomes a person with a personality. Think of Jim Carrey in Liar, Liar. Here's the joke. He's a lawyer who can't get through a day without telling a lie. That can be very arch and nasty, but really, they showed him as a person. He has a kid. He can't connect with his kid. He really secretly likes his ex-wife. Don't they all? Well, no, but... It's Hollywood! And I think that characterization broadened, and also, by the way, and it's not just the Me Show, but I think I was kind of the first woman who started doing this. When you start to take women, when you start to take characters and say, that's the issue I have with the article. People aren't their occupations. That's not a good enough characterization. A lawyer is something you might do for a living, but you are X, Y, and Z. The characterization comes first. And that's what started to happen more recently. And as that has happened, it basically started to make the lawyer be more like us, even though you still have residual negative feelings for various reasons. If you look at the culture and the various works in it, I'm compressing it greatly, they have to read a book a week. They hate that. You come to present day where it's really just about a characterization. And that's the part in the review I really agree with, and I was happy to hear her say, and honored to hear her say. So that's what the course is. Secretly, I want the kids to think a little bit about, because I do think that people generalize to a certain extent. So that, for example, if you're in a grocery store line and somebody butts in the front, you might go, that's just like a lawyer, right? I give them a big lecture the last day of class. Don't butt in front. Don't threaten to sue anybody. Return your phone calls, be a nice person, sit up straight, because I do think that these images are important, and at the same time is that they encapsulate and sort of codify a view. They also reflect it back. So if you didn't think it before, you're thinking it now, right? You could walk into the firm and think lawyers are fine. You come out of there going, all they want is BMWs. And partly, I don't think that begins to change unless lawyers begin to change. So I get these children, and I show them Perry Mason, and they laugh. You know, don't laugh at Perry Mason. I have a crush on Perry Mason. But that's basically what the course is about, and that's the secret reason I'm doing it. It's really fun. It's also really hard. I mean, imagine. Now, unlike her, I have 110 kids in class, and they write on laptops now. Do you know that? You probably know that. Okay, so... try to keep them off of sex.com when you're teaching them. It's not easy. Plus, you know they're IMing each other. You know about the IMing? So you'll see one laugh over there and one laugh over there. Oh, she's writing again, because I know they're going out. They think I don't see, but I see. You don't do that, do you, Matthew? Other questions? Yes, please, sir.
I like the idea that you're not defined by the job. I think that's an important message.
Thank you.
But since you're writing about yourself and your experience, does this mean the next book you're going to write is either about murder at the law school or murder at the newspaper?
No. See, the next book I write is going to be about my new friend. I don't know. I just did finish the next one. The next one, Mary, I know, I was trying to think of how I could summarize the plot. What do we think of the title Old Flame? Who said that? You're scary. You're scary, Barbara. But you are going to get some cupcakes. Well, I'm not sure what, or Going All the Way. That was a very nice catch. Anyway, the next book is about Mary D'Annunzio. The one after that, I don't know. I'm already like, I only get one idea a year. New fire. Ow, ow. Any other questions? I'm having a hot flash, are you? I wanted to name the column Hot Flash, but we all thought better of it.
Probably a lot of us in the audience know nice men and we'd like to fix you up.
What are you waiting for? What are we talking about books for? It has to be older. It has to be no one younger because I'll die. I'm nice. Good. This is embarrassing. We're doing Marla, we went to college together. I'm just a nice person who likes to...
I have one.
Really? Excuse us. We'll just take a minute. I will have to discuss this. A nice person who wants love. Oh, did I just say that? My therapist said, I'm worried. You're going to put me back. I graduated. I do need a good listener. Or someone deaf. Or get me out of it before I get fired.
We have time for one more question.
Oh, thank God. Yes, please.
Which section of Philadelphia are you from?
You look familiar to me. Have we met?
Both.
You look familiar to me. Well, I started life in South Philly, but not for very long. 10th and Daly is my mom's turf. And my father's from West Philly, so it was a mixed marriage. Actually, that's a true thing. I swear to God, they made such a big deal about that. I could not believe. Right? I could not believe when I got older that we were talking about 10 block difference. It's what are we talking about? What? Yeah, it's crazy. It's craziness.
So you were just a little thing.
Yeah. And then to Delaware County, Norwood. And then to Ballykinwood. Moving on up to the east side, and went to Lower Merion, and then Penn undergrad and Penn Law. I don't leave my house. I mean, I know there's a life outside of Philadelphia, but I'm not sure I want to see it. Last question or date? Yes.
Just a comment. My husband said your dad played football for Overbrook. Is that true?
Oh, football?
Dad?
No, Richie. Sorry, guys. No, my dad danced. My dad was, like, gorgeous. And he was a
Casanova.
Well, there you go. He was a Casanova, just in case you didn't. He would actually be happy. No, we didn't do any football manly thing. Why would you? Yeah, right. When you could foxtrot, why would you? Any other dirty linen from my family you want to air? Well, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.